I'm going to ask. If you want to. Okay. Good morning, Council.
Ron, I'd like to thank you for your indulgence this morning. My name is Robert Mazur, representing the appellants Forsyth Memorial Hospital et al. This is a Medicare reimbursement case. Since 1979, Medicare regulations have provided for recognition of a loss on a or gain on a statutory merger between unrelated parties. In the year 2000, the agency issued a program memorandum that required hospitals, merging or consolidating hospitals, to satisfy requirements for a bona fide sale before they could be recognized, before any gain or loss could be recognized, and stated that an element of a bona fide sale was receipt of reasonable consideration. The program memorandum also stated that in determining whether a statutory merger was between unrelated parties, you would look at control of the entity that resulted from the statutory merger. We respectfully believe that both aspects of the program memorandum were incorrect. This court, however, has upheld the Secretary's position that a statutory merger requires reasonable consideration. We believe that in this case, Carolina Medicorp did receive reasonable consideration.
Can I just, to be clear, I appreciate you want to save your arguments for some future point, like the Supreme Court or en banc or something. But for purposes of this panel, there really is no legal issue other than the question of whether there is substantial evidence of bona fide purchase. Is that right?
Well,
fair market value?
We don't necessarily believe it's a substantial evidence issue, but we do believe that the issue is whether it received reasonable consideration.
Okay.
The program memorandum indicated that a large disparity between the value of an asset and the consideration indicated that a transaction was not a bona fide sale.
If it's not substantial evidence, what do you say is the standard of review?
Well, it's the general arbitrary and capricious, Your Honor, because we believe that the agency applied the facts to the wrong legal standard as to what is reasonable consideration. The agency has taken the position that reasonable consideration is when you have in fact received consideration that covered the monetary assets. In the program memorandum, it said current assets, and in the later administrative decisions, they said, you know, if it covered the monetary assets, include current assets and some other assets. In this and other monetary assets, such as funded depreciation, investments, et cetera. In this case, whether you look at the test in the program memorandum or you look at the more difficult test in the administrator's decisions, which have been generally upheld by the appellate courts, Carolina Medicorp received consideration that exceeded the threshold. The consideration that it received was substantially above the value of the current assets. It was substantially above the value, in fact, of all the monetary assets. So this is not a case where there was no consideration paid for the fixed assets, which is what the agency has said indicates that the transaction was not a bona fide sale. The agency.
Do you have any evidence at all of fair market value of your own? You have evidence of book value. Do you have any? Did you put in any evidence at all of fair market value?
The evidence.
That's a yes or no question.
There are appraisals in the record.
But they're against you, right? They suggest that the fair market value is actually I don't remember what the amount was, $60 million or something, even for a partial appraisal was higher than the book value.
Well, the reproduction cost aspect of the appraisal was higher than the consideration. We don't believe that reproduction.
Well, is there any fair market value appraisal that coincides with your view?
Well, there were various. There was no appraisal in the record that states that this is the fair market value in our view. We believe that when the agency developed these regulations, it believed that the parties to the transaction, who were unrelated to one another, knew more about the value of the assets.
As far as the record reveals, there was no appraisal done before the merger was culminated. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor, because And I believe that is consistent with the agency's view when it developed the
record. Is there any evidence in the record? I mean, what the agency says is that the record does not show the basis for determining that the assumption of debt was fair consideration for the provider's assets. Was there anything in the record that indicated that the way in which the hospitals decided, well, I'll put it another way, is there any evidence at all to show how the hospitals valued the assets or why they decided that assumption of the debt was enough?
Well, the fact that they...
They did it, but other than that?
I'm not aware of any direct analysis that says we believe that the liabilities on our book reflect the fair market value of the assets. When the agency developed these regulations, it believed that they could rely on the terms of a transaction that were agreed to by two parties that were unrelated, that it would provide a better number.
We've already held that this was all right and not retroactive, so it's a hard argument to make at this point.
We believe that the agency's determination that it was not reasonable consideration was incorrect. They used a standard which was different from the
standard. Here we are again. What is the standard of review under which we're supposed to be saying it's incorrect?
Arbitrary and capricious, Your Honor.
And you don't think substantial evidence has anything to do with their finding?
Well, I believe that there is an element of factual findings, but in my view, they applied those factual findings to the wrong criteria.
Think for me the criteria that is the wrong criteria and the one that's the right criteria. And I'll try not to interrupt you to get through doing that. Give me two sentences in which you do that.
Well, the criteria is, did it cover did the consideration cover the cash and other monetary assets? That is the criteria that has been used by the agency.
What do you say is the incorrect criteria?
The incorrect criteria was reproduction cost, which reflected the cost of reproducing the same facility.
Isn't that a matter of ascertaining rather than an actual standard of what they're doing?
Well, the actual standard...
To determine what the value is that has to be covered, you have to use some methodology. If you don't have an appraisal before the merger, this sounds like one of the ways that an appraisal might be conducted in finding out afterwards.
Well, the regulations do have a definition of fair market value. Well,
to meet the definition, though, you have to have facts that the definition is applied to.
That is correct.
And you said yourself that it had to cover the value of certain assets.
Yes, that
is. Now, to do that, you have to evaluate those assets.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
To do that, you have to evaluate the assets to apply that definition.
Well, the assets...
Therefore, you have a methodology for evaluation.
Well, I indicated, Your Honor, that it had to cover the monetary assets. It doesn't require any methodology to know that $11 million of cash is worth $11.5 million.
So you're saying that as long as it covered only those assets that are held in cash?
Cash and other monetary assets, investments,
okay,
and that type of thing. The agency...
I'm not sure I understand that argument.
Don't think you catch anything. Excuse me, go ahead.
You only have to have enough to cover the cash?
Cash, investments, accounts
receivable. If you had a $1 billion plant.
Not the building?
Well, you don't have to cover that?
Well, first of all, the test that the agency has used is saying you have to cover the cash and the monetary assets. That's what the program memorandum said. That's what the intermediary said.
Where's that in the record?
The program memorandum?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Does it make any sense to you that if it was $11 million held in plant and in cash and had a $1 billion medical plant, they could pay $12 million and that'd be enough?
It makes sense, Your Honor, that is a reasonable methodology that the agency could adopt. The methodology that they were used in this case.
Can you just show us, before we get to that, if you would answer Judge Sentell's question.
Where's that memorandum?
Where does a memorandum say it's enough? All you have to do is cover the liquid assets.
The memorandum gives, it talks about the
where?
You're looking in the joint appendix, or?
I'm looking for the site in the brief, Your Honor.
The program memorandum, is that started JA 569, is that what you're talking about?
Volume 2.
Okay, so I think it probably would help if you told us what, you know, where on that page, on that.
On page 573.
Uh-huh.
At the bottom paragraph, in analyzing whether a bona fide sale has occurred, a review of the allocation of the sales price among the assets sold is appropriate. In some situation, the sales price may be barely in excess or less than the market value of the current asset sold, leaving a minimal or no part of the sales price to be allocated to the depreciable assets. And then it goes on to say, in such a circumstance, a bona fide sale has not occurred.
You've got to say that what the agency did here is inconsistent
and,
with prior
and
practice.
The administrator's decision in St. Luke's and each of the other cases where the analysis that the agency used was to compare the consideration to the monetary assets, not only the current.
Doesn't that just suggest that if it doesn't even cover the monetary assets or just barely, and there are large fixed assets, it can't possibly be fair market value? But that doesn't mean that doesn't have to cover the fair market, the fixed assets.
Well, it's the test that has been used consistently. By
I don't see that. That's certainly not what we said in our opinion in St. Luke's.
St. Luke's.
So which opinion? And it doesn't say that in this program memorandum. So could you refer us to somewhere where that was the test that it, all you have to do is cover the fixed the liquid assets?
This court did not get into the. Into the exact methodology of reasonable consideration in the
Correct.
St. Luke's decision.
Right.
And you find somewhere that it is said that all you have to do is cover the liquid assets, and then that's enough.
That certainly was the intermediary's testimony.
The intermediary isn't the agency.
The intermediary isn't the agency, but the Medicare statute recognizes the vital role of the intermediary. It provides them, it permits them to give advice to Medicare providers.
There's no deference owed by the court or by the agency to the intermediary's interpretation of the program memorandum, is there?
I believe.
They're just a private contractor.
They're a private contractor working on behalf of the government, and the government, the Medicare program recognizes that they are knowledgeable individuals. It authorizes them and requires them to advise providers regarding the.
Can you show, if you could show me in the intermediary's report where it says what you're saying? You have that?
It is in the Medicare statutory provision for intermediaries, which I believe.
No, I'm sorry.
Where does the intermediary say that all you have to do is have a figure that covers the liquid assets?
Pages 590 and 684 and 685 refer to a page of 20 of our brief where the intermediary's director stated that consideration was reasonable if it covers the assets convertible into cash or something.
What page are you on in the JA now?
684 and 685.
684
and 685.
Okay. You know, this is testimony, right?
Yes.
The intermediary decided against you in this case, is that right?
Not on the issue of adequacy of consideration. And
the agency reversed intermediary on that point?
The intermediary did not make a finding one way or the other.
And the language of the intermediary you're talking about, is that what the intermediary says? This is my judgment, but I would hope to at least get a value that covers the assets convertible into cash or something close to that in the general ballpark, give or take. You know,
that is correct, and we refer to.
And that's the best you've got?
We refer to the testimony before of her boss who said that, where she says, we asked.
That was Mr. Mazur. I'm sorry, Mr. Mazur is the question. That's Mitch.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That's Mr. Who is the person testifying?
Mr. Balcom is the audit manager. He's referring to the previous testimony of Mary Tate, who is the director. Mm-hmm. And we said, Mary Tate said That was,
Where is her testimony in the JA?
Your Honor, I'm sorry, I don't have that cite.
Okay.
And, are there opinions of the administrator that you're relying on for the proposition that covering the assets?
Yes, there are, Your Honor. And those are referred to on page 24 of our brief, on footnote 4, the Germantown, Kennedy, and Sewickley Valley. Each of those, the administrator analyzed the sufficiency of consideration by looking at, did the consideration cover the value of the monetary assets? And on the previous page, page 23, there are the appellate court decisions basically upholding that analysis and finding that it was not reasonable consideration.
Because it didn't even cover that.
Didn't even. Right.
Because it did not cover.
Right. So that doesn't really reach the case we have in front of us, does it? I mean, those sound like a lot clearer cases where it doesn't even or just barely covers.
But those were decisions where it did not cover, right, or just
a barely. But do you have a case that said it would be enough if they did do it? These cases are saying if you don't even do that, you certainly don't have consideration.
We have not had a case, I believe, that where these facts are. In point of fact, Your Honor, it's been is reflected in the cases footnoted at 16 and 17. Each of the cases that the administrator has decided has found that it was not sufficient consideration.
They have not surprising, but it's really not helpful to your argument, is it?
Well, it indicates, Your Honor, that it really has become.
If you've got an item that's for sale for $100, $50 is not enough. That doesn't mean that you have a test that only $50 is not enough. $51 is not enough either. I mean, the fact that something is not enough doesn't mean that something else slightly better is enough. But it's a non sequitur, counsel, isn't it?
We believe that the Medicare program has never really been a strong adherent to appraisals. You know, there is regulations that they say we do not require appraisals. We have the testimony of the individual in charge of the regulation that said, you know, we didn't believe appraisals. A third party knew more about the value of the assets than the two non-related parties who
lived with
these assets.
It's been a long time, but what is the best evidence in the record that this was a value, an appropriate value, an adequate value?
That the fact
you didn't have an appraisal. What did you have instead that you say is as good?
The fact that two unrelated parties agreed to the transaction, and the fact that it is really.
They were nonprofits.
They were nonprofits, correct.
At least some people think they were related. I realize that the court didn't reach that issue, but it's at least asserted that they were related. But they were certainly nonprofits and were operating evidently from goals other than profit making goals, right?
Well, the court is. The Medicare program, of course, ever taken the position that nonprofits are inherently.
I understand that. I'm not asking you to concede any such position. But if your argument is that they merged, they accepted that value, therefore it must have been adequate, that doesn't really work when you have nonprofits who are, if not related, at least both going to be involved in the merged entity, and you have goals other than monetary goals for the nonprofit.
Your Honor, I've seen.
Do you have any other evidence that this is adequate consideration?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, counsel. It's well past your time. If necessary, we'll give you back a couple of minutes for rebuttal. We'll hear from the government, from the appellee, not respondent.
May it please the court, it's the position of the government that this case is squarely controlled by this court's holding in St. Luke's Hospital versus Sebelius last year. That case held that the Medicare will only pay a hospital for its actual and reasonable costs. In the context of depreciation reimbursement, you need some showing that there was a sale for fair market value and objective valuation that would allow you to determine that there was an actual and reasonable additional cost incurred beyond what Medicare had already paid. There was no such showing in this record. There's the substantial evidence clearly supports.
When you say showing, if the numbers had been closer, that is, if the book depreciated book value had been closer or identical, would that be sufficient?
That would not by itself be sufficient because...
Well, have you given them notice that, have you given everybody notice that they have to come in with pre-merger appraisals?
You don't have to show it by an appraisal. That's one way you can show it.
What's another way?
You can show it by the fact that you really did negotiate and you really sought out other bids and you were out on the market and that's the number you arrived at.
Could you show it by evidence ex post? That is to say, if there'd been testimony here that you brought in experts after the fact and testified consistent with their claims, would that have been good enough?
You could show reasonable consideration that way. There's a larger issue, which is that the definition of bona fide sale that the agency applies is that you need both reasonable consideration and an arm's length transaction. So you'd have to show that the parties were motivated to seek maximum value.
Well, if we're looking only at the first issue, if we weren't going to decide the second question, I think the point Judge Chantel is asking about is, couldn't you have a post-merger analysis of the state of the situation at the time of the merger, which ended up showing that this was the fair market value?
That would support a factual finding that there was fair market value, but the mere fact that there wasn't an appraisal before the fact is something that the agency is entitled to take into account in considering whether there was a real exchange for like value.
Let's say the greatest fair market value appraiser in the entire world, who everyone agrees is always right, said after the merger, looked at it and said, yeah, in fact, this was fair market value. He couldn't have gotten any more. You would say that still wasn't enough?
No, I would say that could support a factual finding that there was reasonable consideration. But again, I'm only talking about the bona fide sale analysis.
That's all I'm asking you about.
Right. In the bona fide sale analysis, the agency's definition of a bona fide sale is both reasonable consideration and an arm's length transaction. People are motivated with opposing interests to maximize their value to negotiate out in the open market.
To win on that issue, Dan.
That's absolutely correct because they're so
clearly. You may want to understand what it is you have to win on.
I'm sorry?
You have to win on the issue that Judge Garland and I have been asking you about.
Right.
It may not be to your advantage to keep changing the discussion to the other issue that was pre-permitted by the district judge.
Right. All that you need to do to
You really don't want us to send that back and ever reconsider the other issue, do you?
No. All you need to do to decide this case is to hold that there's substantial evidence that there was no reasonable consideration here. Just the one point, which is merely a point of clarification, just so you understand our position, is I'm not even talking about the related parties regulation, just the definition of what a bona fide sale is. The agency believes that that has two elements to it. But we don't even need to explore whether that second element is satisfied or not.
Where is that part reflected?
That's in the program memorandum.
Can you tell me where that part of
The program memorandum is at page...
No, I got that. Where in it does it say the second part, not only that there be fair market value, but that they be motivated to get fair market value?
Yeah. What page is
this? This is page 3 of the program memorandum, so I guess that would be 572 of the appendix. Under bona fide sale, the second paragraph that describes the definition of a bona fide sale, the main objective is to maximize the consideration received.
Hold. I'm just trying to find it. I have the section that says bona fide sale. You know where it is on that?
So this is the second paragraph underneath bona fide sale.
Right. Bona fide sale typically occurs?
Yes.
Well, it says typically.
That
doesn't mean that's the only circumstance.
Right.
Right. Now,
it goes down to say reasonable consideration is a required element of a bona fide sale, not that it's the only element.
Where is
bona
fide.
That? This is the next paragraph down, as set forth in PRM 104.24. Again, if I could take you a step back, this is not a dispute we need to get into.
The runover sentence, pages 572.
Oh, yeah.
But where does it say there's some other element? That is the element you just talked about.
That's the paragraph above where it discusses what is typically a bona fide sale, where the seller's objective is to maximize the consideration. And that the last couple of sentences of that paragraph, an arm's length transaction is a transaction negotiated by unrelated parties, each acting in its own self-interest.
Well, that sounds
which objective
like,
values
that sounds like you have to win on the unrelated parties part, too.
No, because these are two disjunctive requirements. The provider would have to show both reasonable consideration and an arm's length transaction. So in a sense, this discussion is academic because there so clearly is no reasonable consideration here. We don't need to talk about whether the larger elements of a bona fide sale have been satisfied. But just to be clear as to what the agency's understanding of the definition of a bona fide sale is, that's reflected there in the program memorandum. But it has absolutely no effect on the disposition of this case at all, because all that the court need decide is that substantial evidence supports the finding that there was no reasonable consideration.
Just say for the future that if you really think that in addition to proof of fair market value, you have to show this other kind of evidence, you ought to advise people of that. I'm not saying you won't win if you don't, but I think you're going to be asking for inferences from this program memorandum that the Medicare providers may not understand.
Okay, it's not only the program memorandum, it's also PRM 104.24. It's a definition that has been applied in the past by the agency. But again, this goes far beyond what we need to discuss in this case. All we need to talk about here is whether there was a reasonable consideration. There so clearly was not. They were well over $100 million by if you take the appraisal, well over $200 million more than what they claimed the consideration for the transaction to be. And that's the only issue that the court need decide to resolve this case. With that, I will rest on my brief, although I'd be happy to entertain any further questions.
Okay. Seeing none, we'll give appellant back 2 minutes for rebuttal. If you need it. Now, we're not going to force it on you.
Thank you, Your Honor. The issue that I'd just like to mention, that in a case of a traditional sale of assets, it's very easy to compare the consideration you paid with the value of the assets, at least to compute the consideration. You have a check for $117 million. In the case of a statutory merger, the consideration is the value of the liabilities that are assumed by the surviving entity. We don't know what the value of what the liabilities are. We know that there are $231 million of liabilities that are on the books. The surviving entity also takes every other liability, known or unknown, an environmental claim that comes out of the blue, a discrimination claim that comes out of the blue. These make it very difficult to review the adequacy of consideration, because that $231 million could turn into $431, $431.
So in a normal, in the for-profit world, leaving aside hospitals for the moment, somebody would have made that evaluation. There would be in the record of the buyer some evaluation of what the discounted present value of these liabilities were. Is there anything like that in the record here?
I don't believe that would be the case, Rather. There's no basis for anybody to figure out what is the likely, are we going to have any environmental claims?
If you have evaluation of a going concern, it's not that unusual, as Judge Garland suggests, to have a statement by an appraiser to exactly that effect.
Well,
I'm not talking about an asset evaluation.
Well, you can value
the
assets.
Firm evaluation.
But you can't value the liabilities. No one knows. You know, we have all these cases about.
Exactly. So therefore, you'd have a reserve account that would be designated as such, and you'd have the language Judge Garland referred to.
If they want to shift that burden to the other side, yeah, they might say there's a reserve account.
And in negotiation, you would come up instead with a figure that your appraiser would also say was.
If you asked this hospital, would it rather, or would you ask the surviving entity, would it rather write a check for $231 million or be responsible for all the liabilities, the minimum of which is $231 million, they'd write the check in a second because...
Was there any history here that indicated there was a substantial likelihood of such undisclosed liabilities?
With respect to this hospital...
Yeah, this is possible in any merger. I don't see what singles this out.
Well, it singles
as something
it out.
That would have something to do with this
it issue. Singles it out in the sense that hospitals have had an awful lot of environmental type liabilities that come out of the blue that you didn't know that the radiation that you were using.
So do television stations.
I'm sorry?
So do television stations. They have a lot of.
But everybody EPA has unknown liabilities. It's a matter of the extent to which they are likely. And it's in the minds of any corporate attorney negotiating a deal that there are possible liabilities. Now they may say, it's such a good deal.
We've taken you past your time again, so you,
thank you.
My colleagues have further questions. The case will be submitted, and you can give us recess. Thank you, Captain.
Thank you very much.